You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and an AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and click Listen Online. Welcome to the show. Today's October 23rd, 2013. The markets were down just a bit today. The Dow closing at 15,413, the NASDAQ at 3907, and the S&P at 1746. Last week, we discussed taking care of those you love through estate documents and also taking care of those you love through the WDIY pledge drive and your commitment to WDIY. I want to thank you, thank our listeners, thank you to the listeners of Your Financial Choices for your push to get those donations in during our hour. If you missed the pledge drive and still want to donate, you can do that through the website, wdiy.org. Thank you again. This week, we're discussing bond investing with guest Russ Wild and Kevin Brogius. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I will typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and we'll do the best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. My guests this evening are Russell Wild, MBA and financial advisor at Global Portfolios and author of Bond Investing for Dummies, as well as many other books. Also joining us is Kevin Brogius, CFP and advisor at Wealth Management. Russ and Kevin co-authored an article titled Bonds and Interest Rate Risk. Welcome to the show, Russ and Kevin.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you. They both have been guests here before, which is why they get invited back. When they do a good job, they get to come back. But also because of the knowledge I feel that they can share with our listening audience, especially in the way that they communicate what they know. It's very important for me through this show to help our listeners have better understanding of financial choices that may be in front of them. And so we try each week to come up with a topic to discuss. And bonds and talk around bonds seems to be a hot topic quite often. And I think it would help if people have a little bit better understanding of what all this means when we talk about bond investing. But before we start with that, Russ, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be here?
Well,
your mother.
I am a fee-only financial planner. I've been a fee-only financial planner for about 11 years now. Fee-only means I sell no products, I take no commissions, I work only directly for clients. And as you mentioned, I've written a number of dummies books, mostly on finance, bond investing for dummies, exchange-traded funds for dummies. I live in South Whitehall, and it's a pleasure to be here again.
Thank you very much. And Kevin.
Hi, again, thanks for having me back, Lori. Actually, I'm also a fee-only planner, and I also live in South Whitehall, and I co-authored an article with Russ.
It's amazing how we can all still be friendly with each other, isn't it?
I own Wealth Management. It's a financial planning and money management firm. I have offices in Fogelsville, in Plymouth Meeting, and in Bridgewater, New Jersey.
Okay, very good. Thank you both for being here. Now, together, you wrote an article for NAPFA, which you can tell us what that means.
That's the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors.
And it's usually fee-only, although they're getting...
All fee-only.
Yes.
Exclusively.
Okay. And you wrote that article for them titled Bonds and Interest Rate Risk. And the article is so readable. I really appreciate that. I'm sure your readers and our listeners will as well. And one of the cautions that Kevin had mentioned to me was that people don't understand the risk around bonds. That's how this topic for this show came to be. Kevin and I were talking about topics that we could do. And so because people don't understand the risk around bonds, I thought we could start by talking about that, which the article says what interest rate risk is. I also want to see if through the show we can talk about what duration is. People think duration is a period of time will pass. You might think, oh, a 10-year treasury, the duration on that is 10, but that's not what it means. So if we could, you know, kind of give a little guidance around that. And then looking at government bonds versus corporate bonds. And then maybe if we still have time, talking a little bit about domestic versus international. So let's talk about the article a little bit. And you guys can just kind of talk freeform if you want, like how it came to be and what you cover in the article.
Well, what we cover in the article is we thought it was pretty topical because what we're going through right now, we're probably coming to the end of a 30-year bull market in bonds. So a bull market in bonds is a market where interest rates keep dropping. And essentially, that's what we've seen over the past 30 years. So we've seen a steady decline in interest rates in the past 30 years. And actually, most investors have no idea of what a bear market in bonds looks like. So what we discuss in the article is basically the types of risks associated with falling interest rates and rising interest rates, mainly rising interest rates. And, you know, there is, let me just take a little bit of a sideline here, mm-hmm. because I've been seeing a lot of people recently that come in as prospective clients that are somewhat upset with their portfolio, especially the bond section of their portfolio, especially their U.S. government bond portion of their portfolio. What they tell me is, my advisor told me U.S. government bonds did not have any risk. Well, U.S. government bonds don't have any default risk, and they don't have any call risk. Somebody's going to call them in, and the U.S. government is not going to default on their obligation, but they do share a risk with all other bonds, and that is interest rate risk. Now, interest rate risk is the possibility that market interest rates will change and thereby change the required return and existing bond values. There's really an inverse relationship between interest rates and bond values. As interest rates rise, we'll do that one first. As interest rates rise, prices of existing bonds fall. And here's an example. Suppose you owned a $1,000 5% yield bond. If interest rates go up to 6% sometime in the future, nobody's interested in paying you $1,000 for your bond anymore. Well, why would they?
Because they can go get it out in the market and get 6%.
You can
it's like
still,
chasing CD prices.
Yes. Yeah. So you can still sell your bond, but it'll be worth something less than what you paid for it. And so all bonds have this interest rate risk, including U.S. government bonds.
So that's a good example of interest rate risk. We're coming up on our first break, so I'm going to, before we continue our discussion, I want to just mention again, I have with me this evening Kevin Brogius, CFP from Wealth Management, and Russ Wild from Global Portfolios, both financial advisors, and we're talking about bond investing and in particular what's going on with the risk with bonds and interest rate risk, but we're going to also try to cover some other issues to pay attention to around bonds as well. So when we come back, we will continue our discussion. If you have questions, the number this evening, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me this evening Kevin Brogius and Russ Wild. We're talking about bond investing, and I should say bonds and interest rate risk. And we were just referencing an article that Kevin and Russ wrote together for NAPFA. That's N-A-P-F-A, and their website is napfa.org. And I imagine that your article is probably on their website still. Is that correct, that we could go get this article, Bonds and Interest Rate Risk?
Yes, it is. It's linked there to the Planning Perspectives. I think it's the E. It's an E-document, Russ. Is that what it is?
You go to napfa.org, and yeah, okay. I suppose there's a search function there.
Okay, so Bonds and Interest Rate Risk. And Kevin and Russ wrote this article, and I think it's very easy to read, and they talk about interest rate risk. And Kevin, before the break, just gave us an example of what that would mean and how people talk about U.S. Treasuries not feeling like, you know, they hear from their advisors, oh, there's no risk, there's no... So people think their bond is still going to be worth whatever they paid. They paid $1,000 for it, and they're going to get $1,000 for it, not realizing that it could still come under interest rate risk, and that is if interest rates rise and you bought a bond at, let's say, 4%, and interest rates go up to 5 or 6%, no one is going to want to buy your $1,000 bond when they can go out in the market and buy a $1,000 bond that's going to pay them 5 or 6%. So in order for you to sell your bond, let's say you have to have the cash, you need to sell, what's going to happen is you're going to have to sell your bond for less than $1,000. That's selling it at a discount. And that buyer would only buy it if probably it would yield them a similar return to what they would get in the market. So between the discount that they paid for it and the interest rate that it's going to pay, if it's the 4%, they still want that to get them about, you know, that market rate at about 5%. So we buy at a discount, we get an interest rate, but together we might get that return that's close to what we could get out there in the market. Now, Kevin, you had mentioned something that people don't realize. There's interest rate risk, and that maybe when they're buying treasuries, they're thinking there's no risk. And you had said there may not be any call risk or any default risk. Russ, can you tell us what call risk is or default? Default is probably self-explanatory, but still explain what that means.
No, default is not self-explanatory.
Okay, there we go.
I heard a lot of people during the government talk, during the government shutdown recently, talk about the U.S. government possibly defaulting. No. What really might have happened is that the government would not be making its interest payments over a period of perhaps several weeks until Congress figured it out how to raise the debt ceiling. But I don't think anyone seriously questioned that the U.S. government is going to go bankrupt, go in default, and people are going to lose their principal. The nervousness was around the interest payments and whether those would be made. There was a lot of nervousness in the market, as there should be, because U.S. treasuries are considered safe. As Kevin said, there's certainly interest rate risk, but there's assumed to be no default risk. And if the government did not pay interest on time, it would be disastrous. The markets would just go into total disarray. You ask about call risk. Call risk is the risk, and let me say it's nothing to worry about, because call risk has been serious. As Kevin said, over the last 30 years, interest rates have been dropping. Call risk is when you buy a municipal or a corporate bond, treasuries are never called, you get it at, let's say, well, let's go back a decade or so, you might have gotten it at 10%. When interest rates started falling, the municipality or the corporation had the right to call the bond. So here you were getting your 9-10%, happy as can be. Suddenly your your bond disappears. You're giving your principal back and you're no longer making the 8 or 9%. Moving forward, though, with interest rates presumably on the rise because now they're at historical lows, there won't be many calls. A corporation or a municipality issuing a bond right now at 4% is going to be very happy when interest rates go up to 6, 7% and they're still paying 4%.
And that call risk, people usually know when they're buying that corporate bond or buying that municipal bond if there is a call feature to that bond. Is that correct?
They certainly should.
Okay, they should. So not all bonds have a call feature.
Correct.
Does that affect the price then? For buyers when they're looking at bonds, whether it has a call?
Well, it is another risk associated with the bond. So with a corporate bond, you do get the call risk. You do get the default risk, mm-hmm. which, as Russ explained, you won't get with U.S. Treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
But, bonds are issued by corporations, and, you know, any corporation can go bankrupt.
Right.
And so that's when, you know, you would be in a default situation. So, you know, that there are two risks, and that's why corporate bonds pay more than U.S. government bonds, because you're assuming more risk.
Okay, that's a good point. So here again, you know, when we talk about investing in general, where you have more risk, you hope to get a little bit more return. So one way might a level up from the government bonds would be corporate bonds. So let's talk about investment grade bonds, because in your article you also referenced investment grade bonds. So can you explain what investment grade bonds are, and then versus when we hear people talk about junk bonds or high yield bonds, and explain if there's a difference between junk bonds and high yield bonds?
No, they're synonymous.
Yes, but people don't realize that. So let's tell them about
right,
that.
Right now, it's because interest rates are so low, a lot of people are chasing yield, as we say. And chasing yield means they're going after bonds that pay a high interest rate, much higher than treasuries or investment grade corporate. You have to realize there's no return without risk. So if you're buying a bond now that's paying 6 or 7%, you can assume that it's a junk bond and there's a very significant risk of default. Let me say there's one kind of interest, one kind of bond risk, though, we haven't talked about. There's credit risk. Call risk is minor. And there's interest rate risk. And those two are very great. But there's also what's called inflation risk. Some people are chasing yield, buying bonds right now that are paying 8, 9%. But on the other hand, if you buy bonds that are very safe, such as very short-term treasuries that right now are paying very little, you might get 1, 2%. There the risk is you're not even going to keep up with inflation.
Russ makes a point and he stops. He doesn't need to add any more fluff to it.
No fluff.
No fluff.
Unless you want. I charge extra for that, Laurie.
That's why he's such a great writer, too, by the way. Yeah. He's very to the point. He can condense it, whereas Laurie just keeps talking. So I want to say that one more time because we're going to be coming up on another break. So Russ just made a great point. We've been talking about interest rate risk, and we mentioned call risk, which you said, you know, could be minor. People know that they have that risk when they're buying a corporate or a municipal bond.
And again, with interest rates rising, call risk really almost disappears.
Is not going to be as much of an issue. But you mentioned inflation risk, and inflation is running about what right now?
2-3%.
2-3%. Mm-hmm. So if you're buying some of these short-term treasuries that are paying 1%, then we're already behind the eight ball a little bit with inflation risk. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Especially after taxes, I mean, you're going backwards. So that's what you're insuring yourself of, not maintaining pace with inflation. Although it's very safe from interest rate risk, you know, you have inflation risk and you have taxes on top of that. So the only thing you insure yourself of is continuing to go backwards.
Right. And not losing all of the money for a certain period of time. I mean, you know, you could keep some of it in the end after those conditions, but still wouldn't be able to keep up. You'll eventually run out of money. Okay, folks, we are coming up on our next break. And if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We love questions and happy to take them. We are live. You can give your question to Judy Ann if you're not comfortable talking live on air. Give your question to Judy Ann. She could bring it into the studio. We're happy to answer it. If you are comfortable talking on air, we'll take live calls, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. The time now is 6:20 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back. We are in the studio this evening with Russ Wild, financial advisor, and Kevin Brogius, also a financial advisor. Kevin has his own firm, Wealth Management, and Russ has his own firm as well, Global Portfolios. Russ is also an author of a number of books, one of them being Bond Investing for Dummies. And Kevin and Russ co-authored an article titled Bonds and Interest Rate Risk, which you can find on NAPFA.org, NAPFA.org. Very well written and easy to understand, talking about interest rate risk. This evening, we've already talked about a number of other risks that could apply to bonds and in general, inflation risk, call risk, default risk. So there are a number of other issues. We're trying to cover them. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can call in and talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable with that, you can give your question to Judy Ann, and she will bring it into the studio, and we'll do the best we can to answer it. That is 610-758-8810. Now, we've talked about interest rate risk and what that means, inflation risk, call risk, and we've talked just a little bit about treasuries, which I'm going to come back to in a little bit, but we were talking about investment grade bonds and versus junk bonds or high yield bonds. So I want to go back to that just for a minute more and kind of reiterate the difference between that. Is how do people know if something's an investment grade bond, other than going to, you know, they can go to their financial advisor and hopefully ask for them. But when someone's working with even a financial advisor, trying to do things on their own, and they see kind of these high interest rates they're getting on certain bonds, that could be an indication that it's when we're calling them high yield, that's a euphemism for a junk bond.
Yes.
And a junk bond is paying a high interest rate because there's more risk. When we talked before the break, we talked about the more risk you take, the higher the interest rate. So if everywhere else in the market, we're looking at bonds that, you know, U.S. Treasuries, et cetera, that are paying, you know, 1 to 2%, and you're getting a high yield bond at 6%, that's an indication that it's a junk bond, right? So investment grade bonds, what are we talking about looking at there? Are we looking at big corporations? And how many corporations are putting out bonds right now?
Well, they are still issuing bonds.
They're raising money
because,
when
you know, why wouldn't they? Because money is cheap right now.
Right.
And so not necessarily for expansion of the business, but for potentially future expansion of the business. So if they can get current market rate interest and float a 20-year plus bond, they can hold on to very cheap money for a long time.
Okay.
All right. And now, you know, you talk about investment grade bonds, and how do you know? It's, you know, Moody's and AM Best, et cetera, do ratings of bonds.
Okay.
And for the Moody's rating, anything that's rated BBB or better is an investment grade bond.
Okay, BBB or better.
BBB or better, right. Now, the grading matters because the lower the grading, the more interest the issuer will have to pay to cover the default risk associated with that bond. Okay?
Okay.
So the rating agencies are very important in determining how much default risk these companies have.
Okay. So some people, even though it would be considered a junk bond subject to maybe a higher risk of default, some people might be willing to take that risk.
Sure.
And go with those bonds to chase those interest rates.
Sure. Some knowledgeable investors will buy junk bonds knowing what they're doing, but a lot of people buy them thinking there's a free lunch, and there is no free lunch. If you could get 7 or 8% buying short-term treasuries without any default risk, without any credit risk, then you would do that. The only reason that these companies offer 7 or 8% is because they have to, because knowledgeable bond investors will not buy those bonds without getting a premium.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Now, let's talk about when we talk about government bonds. Government bonds can be U.S. treasuries or can be municipals. And for, you know, recent years, too, we hear more worry and concern about municipalities and is there, you know, are they going to go bankrupt like we saw in Detroit? And someone had said, well, if people didn't see that coming, you know, what do we think about? Can you guys just kind of talk back and forth a little bit about government bonds, U.S. versus municipals and how people might look at those? Without giving specific advice, because we don't give any specific advice on the show as far as investments. But just in general, what do we need to know about, you know, using government bonds in our portfolios?
Well, municipal bonds, as many listeners may know, a lot of them are exempt from taxes, from income taxes. And the higher the tax bracket you're in, the more attractive then this form of income is to the holder of the municipal bonds. Historically, there have been very few defaults, okay? However, you know, it makes you a little bit nervous when you look at a lot of the debt and some of the unfunded liabilities that these cities and states have right now, okay? Now, Detroit's a good example, you know, the Detroit bankruptcy. So we did see, a little bit of a blip in the municipal bond market after that happened. But I would say a lot of that was priced in already because the investment community already knew what was going on in Detroit. And Detroit was paying handsomely for their municipal bonds before the default. So people knew what they were getting.
Okay. So there again, more risk. They were paying a little bit more interest.
Right.
So to your point about municipals being exempt, they're exempt from income tax on the federal level. And then on the state level, it depends on what state of issuance the bond was. So if you're a Pennsylvania resident, you could buy Pennsylvania bonds and they're not going to be subject to federal income tax or state income tax. However, if you live in Pennsylvania and you're buying California bonds, you're supposed to add that tax-exempt interest from the California bonds back to your income on your Pennsylvania return. And that's typical in any state across the country. New York, your New York bonds are exempt, but your Pennsylvania bonds wouldn't. So each state will exempt their own their own bonds from taxation. There are some municipal bonds that will be exempt for federal purposes, but may have an element of special activity that wouldn't be exempt for alternative minimum tax. So sometimes when we're talking with higher net worth taxpayers, when they're looking at municipal bonds to buy, they have to maybe look at a triple element, which is federal, state, and to make sure it's not subject to AMT as well.
Right.
I usually only have ever seen that as a very tiny element, though, of most of those bonds. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a municipal bond that is, you know, 100% is it special activity? Yeah. So, I mean, is that typically what you guys see, too? I mean, it's usually just a small percent. Okay, we are coming up on our next break, and if folks have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Community Public Radio for the Lehigh Valley. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Russ Wild, MBA and financial advisor at Global Portfolios and author of Bond Investing for Dummies, as well as many other books. Also joining us is Kevin Brogia, CFP and advisor at Wealth Management. Russ and Kevin co-authored an article titled Bonds and Interest Rate Risk. So we're talking about bonds tonight, and there's lots to talk about with bonds. We've talked about interest rate risk, but we've also tied in and explained call risk, default risk, inflation risk. We've talked a bit about government bonds. We've talked a bit about investment grade bonds versus junk bonds or high yield bonds, being the euphemism for junk bonds. Junk bonds being there is a higher degree of default risk with those, which is why they pay a higher interest rate. So trying to kind of package this all together, you guys, and giving us a picture, can we talk about a few more things as far as when we're talking about bonds? We have not referred in our conversation so far about maybe individual bonds versus mutual funds. Mutual funds is a basket of some investment, whether it's equities or bonds. And a mutual fund may, people think, diversify their risk. They need to understand the underlying positions in there. But let's talk a little bit about, and you can do this free form, let's talk about putting this all together and kind of looking at how, what are the opportunities for folks when they're considering using bonds in their portfolios? What are their options? What do they need to pay attention to? Kind of summarizing what we've talked about. We have a half an hour, but I don't mean to tell you have to wrap it up in 5 minutes.
I think, and maybe we should have started the show with this, that the purpose of bonds is not to get rich. Very few people, except the traders of bonds, get rich on bonds, especially in this low interest rate environment. What a bond portfolio does, most investors have stocks and bonds. Stocks, of course, means ownership in companies. Bonds is really just a fancy word for an IOU. You've got a guaranteed income stream when you buy a bond, and therefore you should not expect a very high return as you would in stocks. So the purpose of bonds is to provide ballast, something that's going to hold firm if the markets go kaplooey and you lose 40% in stocks, as people did in 2008. So given that, we've talked about corporate bonds, we've talked about munis, we've talked about treasuries. Is it better to go with funds or is it better to go with individual bonds? U.S. treasuries have no risk of default and they're very easy and cheap to buy and sell. I have no problem with people buying individual treasuries. When you get to corporates and munis, though, and we talked about Motown going down, Kevin's right, it doesn't happen often, but it does happen. And if you had your bond portfolio in Detroit bonds, you'd be a very unhappy camper right now. Corporate bonds go belly up much more often. If you're investing in munis or corporates, Kevin, I know, agrees with me, bond funds are the way to go. There's been a revolution in funds over the last decade with the introduction of exchange-traded funds, which are like mutual funds, but they trade on the exchange like the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. The price of bond funds has come down so low. I know you don't want me to mention individual names, but I could give you dozens of bond funds that charge less than 0.5% a year in management fees. You're going to pay a bond broker, particularly in muni bonds, 1%, 2%, maybe 3% every time you trade. The bond funds are the way to go because they give you instant diversification. You don't have to worry if you've got a Detroit bond in a bond index fund. It's going to be one of thousands of muni bonds.
Blip.
It's going to be a blip, and that's what you want. You want maximum diversification. You're going to get that with funds. You're not going to get that with individual bonds.
And individual bonds, sorry, Kevin, I think you were going to say something, but because the individual bonds, you're using a bond broker who's taking a fee,
yes,
and that affects your eventual return and amount you can invest, et cetera.
It's called a markup or a markdown, and you have to go through a lot of work to figure out what the bond broker spent for the bond that he's charging you for. And it's possible, but it's a lot of work, and personally, I don't think it's worth it.
And then there could be more risk because it's typically you're buying one or maybe a handful of bonds versus in a bond fund, which may own 1,000.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Kevin, do you have?
No, I agree with Russ. I don't ever recommend for my clients individual bonds or individual securities. When you buy individual bonds or individual securities, what you're doing is adding non-systemic risk to your portfolio. That's a risk associated with individual security or a focused investment. And there is no reward for assuming that risk, okay? So a better way to do it, again, a cheaper way to do it is, and full diversification, just buy the bond fund, okay? Now, when you buy the bond fund, you have to know what you're buying, okay? You have to know the risks associated with that fund. One of the things we had talked about is interest rate risk, okay? And there's a very easy way to measure interest rate risk. And all funds measure this, and it's a concept known as duration.
There we go. I wanted to talk about duration. Okay. So here it comes, folks.
Okay. So duration measures the percentage change in the price of a bond or a bond fund that can be expected given a percentage change in the yield of the bond. All bonds and all bond funds have a duration. Now, how does it work? I'm going to give you an example, which is probably easier. Suppose you own a bond fund with a duration of 3, and interest rates for similar bonds increase 1 point. The value of your bond fund will decrease by about 3%. So if you invested $1,000, your investment would now be worth $970. It's listed right in the bond fact in the fund fact sheet in the prospectus. You can easily get that. Now, the higher the duration of the fund, usually the higher interest or yield you will get on that investment. So there is where risk and reward are linked again.
Can I ask you to repeat that and go through it a little, just a little bit more? And I don't want to lose the listeners because I think this is important because I don't think 2-3 years ago we even knew the word duration in, you know, probably the individual world. I mean, advisors probably knew it. Managers might have known it, but I'm not really sure we've heard this word as much as I am starting to hear it now. So duration, a fund or a bond fund will have a duration posted in its literature.
Correct. And which measures your interest rate risk.
Measures your interest rate risk, because we talked about interest rate risk already, which, remember, folks, we said if interest rates are rising and I have like a 4% bond and interest rates go up, my cost of my bond, my ability to sell my bond at the face value is going to decrease because I can get a higher interest rate out there. So the term duration is measuring interest rate risk, and a duration of 3 does not mean 3 years. Duration of 3 means that as interest rates increase by 1%, the 3 means the value of my portfolio would be expected to decrease 3%.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So if I have a duration of 5 and interest rates increase 1%, my value is going to go down 5%. And you said because I have a bigger number in my duration, that would mean that bond fund I have, there's going to be more risk there.
Mm-hmm.
So I might expect to get a little bit more return out of that bond fund. Am I
correct.
Understanding
correct.
That right?
Yes.
Okay,
right.
Good. All right.
No, so I have some examples.
Okay. I want to say the phone number, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, if you have questions. Go ahead, Kevin.
So I looked up a couple of average funds before I came over here. So, for example, an average intermediate term treasury fund right now pays about 2.25, something like
okay.
that. And that has a duration of about 7.5. So what that means is for a $1,000 investment, if interest rates increase 1 point,
mm-hmm.
that fund can be expected to drop $75. Okay. Now, compare that to the long-term treasury, where the intermediate term paid 2.25,
uh-huh.
the long terms are paying about 3.6%. Very attractive yield
right.
for a treasury. However, the duration on the long-term treasuries averaged about 16.5.
Okay.
So what that means is, for your $1,000 investment, should interest rates increase 1 point, you can expect that fund to lose $165.
Okay, and that's 16.5%. And to the top of the show where you guys said people don't understand interest rate risk, people think U.S. treasuries are safe, that their principal's protected, they're forgetting about interest rate risk and the impact of this. We have a caller, Mike, on line two. Mike, can you hear us?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. How can we help you?
There was a lot of talk recently about the Fed buying back bonds to stimulate the economy. I'd like you to expound on that a little bit.
Okay. Do you want to stay on the line, Mike, or do you want to drop off and just listen to the answer?
I'll drop off and listen to the answer.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Bye, Mike,
bye.
We're financial planners, not economists, but I did major in economics in college, so I think I could take a crack at your question. Yes, when the government is buying back bonds, it's paying the bondholders and it's releasing more money into the economy. So it's one form of monetary policy used to juice the economy, and there's been a lot of that lately. It's been likened to steroids because at some point, of course, when the government is pumping too much money into the economy, we're going to see inflation. It's also referred to as a steroid because if they stop right now with their bond buying, and I don't know the figure, they're buying billions every week. When they stop, there's a fear that the economy will shrink.
So that is... the concept of the Fed buying back bonds to stimulate the economy, that's what they've been trying to do. You're saying it's putting it on steroids. They're putting more money into the economy. The fear is if they stop, it will shrink. But if they do it we're not going to talk about the economics of it, so I won't go there. But that explained it. So thank you, Russ, for doing that.
Well,
and Mike,
let me add something to that, Lori, mm-hmm. because in the spring of this year, the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, indicated that if the nation's economic data continued to improve, we could see a tapering of the Federal Reserve bond buying activities later in the year. Now, after he said that, that sent the Treasury market into a tailspin. So what he was signaling was higher interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fed would back up from the market, stop buying as many bonds as they did. So in order to make the bonds more attractive to the investment community, the interest rates would have to rise on that. The impact of that was pretty harsh on some bond funds. And if you look at the long-term Treasury bond funds, after he made those comments, in 1 month's time, it lost 15%. So you have to be aware, again, of the risk associated with your investment. You have to educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pull out the prospectus, read it, find out what the duration of the fund is. And so, you know, if interest rates do increase or if they're expected to increase, mm-hmm. we're going to see a downturn in bonds.
We had another call come in. We had a call come in from Ted, and it's off air. And Ted asked a question I'm not sure we're going to be able to answer, so we might need Ted to call back and ask the question. He asked, what does it mean when a bond has a make-whole provision? Whole, W-H-O-L-E.
I don't know.
Okay.
Kevin?
We've not heard of that. What does it mean when a bond has a make-whole provision?
No, maybe he can give us more details on
that. Ted, if you want to give us a call back and give us a little bit more information on that question, that would be helpful. That might be a flag, actually, because, you know, when we talk about the various risks associated with bond buying, whether it's individual bonds or you know, these funds, the people who are investing in bonds know that there's certain risk inherent in that provision. And to say make whole provision, it sounds like what's his name, Madoff or something, may call. Not sure about that.
But Lori, while we're waiting for Ted to call back, I'd like to address a big misconception about bonds. We were talking about whether to buy bond funds or individual bonds. We were talking about interest rate risk. A lot of people mistakenly believe that they can sidestep interest rate risk by buying individual bonds. The theory is if you buy a 20-year bond, you don't care what happens to the price because you're going to get your principal back after 20 years. But the saying goes, if you buy a bond fund and the price goes down, hey, you're out money. No, it doesn't work that way. Yes, if a bond fund goes down, you're out money. But if the individual bond you're holding, if interest rates go from, say you buy a bond paying 5% and ambient interest rates go up to 7%, yes, you can hold that bond for another 20 years, but you're going to be eating crow for 20 years.
Right.
You're going to be getting less than all of your neighbors.
Right.
Whereas if you have the bond fund, the price will temporarily dip. But then as the bond manager buys new bonds paying 6, 7%, you'll be getting a much higher interest rate than the guy holding the individual bond.
That's a great point. And that is in your article as well. Okay, we had Ted who called back on line two. Ted, can you jump on? Are you there, Ted?
Hello, yes.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Can you tell us where you saw this make-whole provision and what you meant by it?
Well, I bought some bonds several years ago at very high nominal yields, and of course, as the rates fell, they started getting called away, and they'd be called away with a make-whole provision. And what it practically meant is that I got more than par when they were called, but I don't know how they figure it or what the timing of it is.
I've seen that provision. I didn't know it's called a make-whole. Yeah, when a bond is issued with a call, it will tell you what you're going to get when the bond is called. And usually it's par. So if you pay $1,000 for a bond, you're going to get $1,000. But sometimes bonds come in all shapes and flavors and sizes and colors. And yes, I've seen provisions where the corporation or the municipality can call the bond, but instead of getting $1,000 back, they'll give you $1,100. I didn't know that was called a make call. Thanks for that.
Oh, well, glad to be a service then.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Good night.
Okay, Ted, anything else around that then?
No, that's about it, except that I've been hearing things that bond funds have a flaw in that they don't mature and that you're always exposed to the interest rate, whereas with an individual bond, of course, you would get back your money at a certain time.
Well, and Russ just explained that, which I thought was very important. And that article that you guys wrote also talks about that. And if you have an interest in looking at that, it's at Bonds and Interest Rate Risk. And the website was NAP as in Paul, F as in Frank, A, NAPFA.org. And he talks about that some people think that they're not at risk if they hold the bond till maturity. But in fact, they've taken their money off the table with the opportunity of earning a higher interest rate. Okay?
That's true.
All right. Okay. Great, Ted. Thank you so much. Have a good night. We had another call come in from Chitter off air. Question about duration. If interest rate decreases, does the bond then increase?
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Because you also explained that in your article.
Yeah, there's an inverse relationship between interest rates and bond values. So as interest rates increase, bond values will decrease and vice versa. So again, if you bought a 5% bond, $1,000 5% bond, and interest rates went down to 4%, your bond would be worth more.
Okay, so maybe what he was asking then, too, that duration number. So if we have a duration of 3, and we said if it goes up 1%, the value will go down 3%. Does it work the same way for duration? If we go interest rates go down 1%, our value would go up 3%.
Yes.
Of course, everybody's expecting interest rates to go up. And I'd like to say something about that.
Yep.
We are at historical lows right now. And yes, over time, interest rates will probably revert back to higher levels. But a lot of people now are waiting for that to happen. And they're keeping.
They've been waiting, though,
haven't they?
They've
been waiting a long time. And the Japanese have been waiting for over 20 years for their interest rates to go up. So if you're keeping money in cash, and I see people doing this, keeping money in cash, waiting for interest rates to go up, you may be waiting a long time, and your return on cash is going to be negative of the inflation rate. You're earning -2 or -3 or -4%. It's a mistake to do that. You can buy bonds, stay on the low end of the duration spectrum, and at least keep even with inflation.
So staying on the low end of the duration or short-term bonds, you might not be exposed as much.
Well, it's funny. Russ and I were actually speaking about this on the way over here, and I try to keep my portfolios within the 4 range of duration. Russ is a little bit higher on his. But again, you don't want to go all the way down to, 0.5 duration, because then again, you're not making any yield.
Right.
So risk and reward are always linked.
Right.
Okay. You want to have some risk in your portfolio to get some yield on your investments.
Now, let me see, and I don't know if you guys will be able to answer this, but because they have been saying interest rates, have to go up, they've been saying that for probably 2 or 3 years, interest rates have to go up. And how does that kind of sentiment affect the bond market? And have we seen where we've actually had volatility in the bond market because people think it's going to happen? Then, whoops, it's not happening. So now we're going to go back into bonds. Oh, maybe it's going to happen again. Now we're going to go out of bonds.
We have seen a mass exodus out of bond funds.
Okay.
People are scared, and a lot of people are putting the money in cash. Or alternatively, they're looking at alternative investments like REITs, real estate investment trusts. Nothing against REITs. Nothing against high dividend paying stocks. But they are a whole different kettle of fish with a much greater risk profile than most bonds.
And people don't always realize that. And those kinds of positions can also be affected by interest rate. Mm-hmm. Rate changes.
You bet.
People
don't realize. If interest rates shoot up, it's not only going to hurt your bond portfolio, it could feasibly hurt your stock portfolio even more. High interest rates are not good for the economy, especially when they move fast, because it makes it more expensive for businesses to borrow. When businesses have a hard time borrowing, they're less likely to hire, less likely to expand.
Okay. Now, but the saying has been that a lot of businesses have a lot of cash parked and have had that cash parked. So people might think, well, companies have a lot of cash. It's not going to be expensive for them to borrow because they don't have to borrow. But at some point, they will be affected by it too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we would see still an effect.
Sure. You just can't expand your business at the rate that you've been expanding your business with higher interest rates. So even though you have a lot of cash, a lot of cash on hand means you have some retained earnings and your investors want a return on their retained earnings, probably around 10% and higher if interest rates continue to go up.
Okay.
So, that's a basis for what investors expect.
Smaller companies do not have these pools of cash
Very
that the
good.
Larger companies do. And therefore, when you buy small cap stocks, there will be more interest rate sensitivity.
Okay. So let's talk a minute about asset allocation, because we've been talking about bonds. We've been talking about that interest rates will affect that, but interest rates will also affect other pieces of the portfolio. So, and we know as advisors that asset allocation is probably the most important thing to use when you're building a portfolio.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about asset allocation and what that looks like. And if people are thinking, oh my gosh, I have to get out of bonds because my bonds aren't safe, and they think they're going to get out of them. Can we speak to that a little bit? Is mm-hmm. that really rational thought, especially in light of that we just sat here and said they've been looking for interest rates to go up for years?
What I do when I initially sit down with a client, the first thing I do is, especially if the client is a conservative or wants to lean conservative on their investments, I will show them their plan. If everything's invested in cash, that's the very first thing I do.
And I said, with an inflation rate.
Right. Yeah. With an inflation of 4.7%, right?
Run it out 20 years.
So here's what your plan looks like. Now, can you live with this lifestyle? This is no risk. Okay. Except you're going to go backwards every year. You're not going to maintain inflation. There's a whole lot of problems with this, but your money's going to be in the bank and you can get it whenever you want to. Do you want that? Oh, no, we weren't thinking of that. I said, okay, well, how much risk do you want to assume? And then, we go through a couple of different portfolio situations. Do you want a 50-50 portfolio? This lost, say 25% during the Great Recession, et cetera, et cetera. So then we kind of settle in on how much risk do you want to assume and how much reward, and basically what lifestyle you want in retirement then.
One of the buzzwords today that everyone's talking about is alternative investments. People are so fed up with low interest rates and scared of stocks after 2008. They're looking for alternative investments. And that could mean any number of things. Usually they're turning to complicated derivatives, variable annuities. There is only one thing that has historically proven to be a successful complement to stocks, and that is high-grade, investment-grade bonds, and I think that's a crucial part of somebody's portfolio. As Kevin and I have said, you want to be short on duration right now, not too short, maybe 3-4 duration, mostly high quality bonds, and that's the only time proven complement to a stock portfolio that I know of.
Good point. And let's take a real quick minute to talk about also not only asset allocation and balancing your portfolio with your risk tolerance, but also looking at your portfolio and how you have it invested in retirement accounts versus non-retirement accounts. By retirement accounts, folks, I mean 401ks and IRAs. That all comes out as ordinary income. Anything we invest in those other than like a Roth
IRA.
Yeah. It comes out ordinary income. I have had people say, oh my gosh, my IRA, I had this happen once, my IRA, I have great dividends. It's paying great dividends and capital gains. This is fantastic in their IRA. And I had to tell them, you're not getting any tax advantages from that, sir. It's all coming out ordinary income. So along with doing asset allocation, you're looking at portfolios and where you're putting the different pieces of the portfolios and which kind of accounts?
Yeah,
does that make sense? I
make it as tax efficient as possible.
There's the word.
You know, I try to put as much income producing assets inside tax advantaged accounts like IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, even, you know, some annuity products. Mm-hmm. You could also hide income producing. By income producing, I mean bonds, I mean REITs.
Other
than municipal bonds. It's especially critical when you talk about Treasury inflation protected securities, because not only is the interest taxable fully, but the bond principal adjustment, and that's probably a whole other show, the bond principal adjustment for Treasury inflation protected securities is fully taxable.
Yeah.
Okay. So you also want to hide those inside tax advantaged
Okay. Thanks, you guys, for being here. I wanted to mention one other thing. Once you've filled up your various buckets of those retirement accounts, taxable accounts, and non-taxable accounts, when we're looking at clients that may be high net worth and we're talking about a Medicare net investment income tax this year, using munis also would help them as well, because that brings down extra tax on that tax-exempt income. Kevin, can you give us contact information if people want to know more about you? What's your phone number?
Yeah, sure. You can reach me at 484-264-6270 or on the web at wealthmanagement1.com. And if you want to see this article that we wrote for NAPFA, I also have that link to my website.
Okay, and that's wealthmanagement1.com.
Yeah, number one, yes.
Okay, and Russ?
My phone number is 610-530-0078, and my website is globalportfolios.net.
Globalportfolios.net. Russ, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you, Laura.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks
and for the idea for the show. Kevin first talked about bond, talking about interest rate risk, and I said, oh, well, you know, I know a guy who's really good at that, Russ Wild. And he knew him, and they wrote an article together. So please check that out. Thank you for being here, Jeff. Thank you for being here. Judy Ann, thanks for taking the calls. And listeners, thank you so much for calling in the questions. Life care planning next week with attorney Jim Ruggiero. Life care planning. Thank you. Pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week and stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller within the Tradition Folk Music. Good night.